Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sukkah Daf Chof. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 15 lines from the bottom of Daf Chof. Before we begin the shiur, let us take advantage of the topic heading that we see on the side of the Gemara. There we have noted under the Nosei, Machlokes Rabbi Doisa v'Chachomim be'inyan Tumas Medris Hashayach b'Chotzolos. We will see a Tanaic source that reports a Tanaic controversy between Rabbi Dosa and the Chachamim regarding an item called Chotzolos. Now, as far as what are Chotzolos, so we will see a Machloikis Mahu Chotzolos. Rabbi Avdimi, in our Gemara, we'll see Rav Avdimi Bar Hamduri. Rav Avdimi says, Mezabli. The word Chotzolos that's found in the Tanaic source is a reference to Mezabli. That is something Mashiroyim Somim Tachas Roshem. It's something that shepherds put under their heads when they want to recline out in the fields. And Reish Lakish will tell us that it is Machtzolos mamish. The word chotzolos sounding like machtzolos, it simply means actual mats. There are pictures that accompany this. You can see in the Pirush Chai, the book of illustrations that we've been using since the beginning of the Masichta, on page 63. There's an illustration 324 of the Mezabli. That was Rav Amdimi's explanation as to what chotzolos are. We continue. Be'omid Beis Acharei Hasoigrayim. On Omid Beis, of this, the Daschof Omid Beis, you'll notice in our Gemara, in our Shas Ozer, the marked Gemara that you see on your screen or you have in front of you, you see a bracketed section starting from the lower part of Omid Aleph, about 8-9 lines up from the bottom. So after this bracketed section that continues till Omid Beis, HaGemara Tavi Kushyos Al Shnei Deos Elu B'Shnei L'Shoinos B'Gemara. The Gemara will challenge Rav Avdimi Bar Amduri and Rav Shimon Ben Lakish, but the challenge will appear in two different versions of the Gemara. We call two Lashonos. If you have Chof Omid Beis in front of you, you can scroll ahead or turn the page. You can see on Omid Beis Roman numerals 1 and 2. The number 2 on the line that the number 2 appears, it says Iko, the Amri, it's a different version. And we will see with the markings, we highlight the words Marzuvli, which is the Mezabli approach of Rav Amdimi, and Machtzolos Mamish. We use two different shapes highlighting those words, and the Gemara in Roman numeral number 1 will say that the source that's brought in as a question works out well for the Marzuvli Pshat, but the Machtzolos Pshat will have difficulty. Then when you look at Roman numeral number 2, things get switched around. There, the Gemara says that things work out well. Bishlamo leman domar machtzolos mamish. There, the version two, it starts off saying that things work out well according to the Reish Lakish pshat, but according to the Rav Avdimi Marzuvli pshat, there will be a difficulty, and the Gemara resolves. So, hopefully, the overview of the Gemara is a little clearer before we begin the actual Gemara. So what we've said is we're going to see a source dealing with chutzalos, a machlokas tanoim regarding their ability to makabel medras, and there will be then a we'll see two pshatim as to what chutzalos are, and on Amud Beis there will be questions raised against both of the pshatim, each question starting from a different version of the Gemara, two lishonos in the Gemara. Now the Gemara, as we said, 15 lines from the bottom. Tanan hosam kol hachotzolos mitamin tomei meis divrei Rabbi Dosa. We can't translate chotzolos at this point, as we said in our introduction. There are two pshatim, two explanations as to what it is, but all chotzolos are makabel, are susceptible to defilement through the dead, tumas meis. The chachomim oimrim medras, and the chachomim say tumas medras. Tumas medras, just by way of general knowledge, is tuma that is communicated by certain types of tome individuals, a nida, a zava, a zav. If they sit on something that's designed for sitting, a chair, a bed, a mattress, a mat, if they sit on them, they become tome to the extent that they become an avatuma. They, the medras, and I always point out that if you look at the word medras, it reminds you of the word mattress. And that's exactly what it is. It's a mattress or something similar to, in terms of design for sitting. They become tome to the extent that they're called an avatuma, and if a person or vessels come into contact with it, they will in turn become tome. So the Chachamim say that chutzalos are subject to tumas medras. The Gemara asks, medras in tomei meis loy, are the Chachamim to the exclusion of Rabbi Dos in the sense that only tumas medras and not tumas meis? Chutzalos, according to the Chachamim, are not subject to tumas meis. How could that be? But we have a Tanaic source that teaches a rule. Kol hametame medras, anything that's susceptible to tumas medras, metame tome meis. It entails, or it's understood that it also is subject to tumas meis. To restate that, if something is capable of being makabel, even tumas meis, then certainly it is capable of becoming tomei meis. So, in understanding the chachomim in the source, we have to restate things emo, rather state af meis. When the chachomim who appeared three lines ago, they said chomom remedris, they meant to say af medris, even medris, which includes the susceptibility to tumas meis and even tumas medris. The Gemara asks, my chotzalos, what are chotzalos? Oh, marav avdimi bar hamduri, marzuvli. My marzuvli, what is meant by that? Omer Rebbe Abba, mizavli. And mizavli was something more commonly known than the word marzuvli. Mazavli helps the people who understand who Aramaic or lived in the time of the Gemara, but we need to explain a little more. And we saw we mentioned in our introduction that mizavli, Rashi points out, are something that shepherds would place under their heads when they were wanted to lie down out there in the fields. Reb Shimon ben Lakish Omer, Reish Lakish says, Machsolos Mamish, that Chotzolos in the source means actual mats. As you can see, we have a bracketed section, and this is very helpful in the structure of the Gemara, because if you skip the bracketed section, we have a bracket explanation note on the side of the Gemara as well, and we note Achrei HaSograyim B'Amud Beis HaGemara Takshe'a Al Reish Lakish. On Amud Beis, the Gemara will open up with a question, and the first question, in fact, is a question to be directed against Reish Lakish. So that if you do turn to Amud Beis, you'll notice after the brackets, use your bracket length indicator to find where it ends, the Gemara says Meisvei. And there's a long question that follows, and at the end of that long question, we're going to have a question on Reish Lakish. The Gemara will answer, of course, the question and then lead into version number two. So hopefully the structure is clear. We just got finished with a machlokis, Rav Avdimi and Rav Shimon ben Lakish, regarding what the definition of chotzalos are. After the brackets, I know we're sounding a little repetitious, but after the brackets, questions will be directed against these opinions. Now, within the brackets, we have a topic heading on the side which deals with the area that's in the brackets. Following Reish Lakish's approach, we're going to then have a hesber, machlokes Rabbi Yosef Achomon d'Liel b'inyan tumas medras. So before the Gemara deals with the Amoraim on Amud Beis, it goes back to deal with the machlokes Tanoim. So in order of, let's say, structure of the Gemara is going to raise its quest, raise its discussion analysis first on the Tanoim, which deserve to be placed first, and then on Amud Beis, the Gemara will get back to the Amoraim. So we're going to be masber the machlokas Rabbi Yosef Achomon d'Liel b'inyan tumas medras shel chotzalos. Hagemora tagdir al ezu machtzalos cholkim. The Gemara will define regarding what kind of machtzalos, in fact, they argue about. So we continue now in the Gemara in the brackets. V'ozda Reish Lakish l'tame. Reish Lakish, in explaining that Rabbi Doisa and the Chachamim are arguing about machtzalos mamish, Reish Lakish is following his approach from elsewhere. The Omar Reish Lakish. We have internal angular brackets. Skip them momentarily. Reish Lakish says, "Lo nechliku." Second to last line. "Lo nechliku." Rabbi Yosef Achachomim, "Amachzolos shel usha." They don't argue about the usha machzolos. Shehein Tameos at the top of Omid Beis. The amachzolos of usha. Usha is the name of a place. Those mats are clearly mekabel tumas medras as well. There's no argument about that. That they're mekabel tumas medras, they are designed for leaning. And medras, as we mentioned before, is the tuma that's associated or that is sets upon items that are designed for reclining. Vishel Tveria, the Gemara at the top of Omid Beis, says that the machzolos of Tveria, Shehein Torah, there's no argument about them. They are hard material. No one leans or reclines on them. Amanechliku al sha'ar mekoymos. They argue about the mats in other places. Okay, we're going to go over all of this again. What we wanted to do is give you the feeling of how to read the Gemara smoothly. Now, within the brackets, and the note on the side, the double-starred note, indicates Sograyim l'shem dilu k'dei lishmo al retzef hakriya. The purpose of these brackets is to maintain the continuity of the reading. Now, within the brackets, Reish Lakish says, D'yom Reish Lakish, Hareini kaporas Rabbi Chiyu Bonav, I want to serve as the atonement for the now deceased Rabbi Chiya and his sons. This idea of serving as atonement, Rashi explains three lines from the bottom. Yisurin haboyin olai, troubles that come upon me. L'chaparoso shel Rabbi Chiya b'nei Yehu. I want the suffering that I experience, I'm willing to absorb this suffering and let it be an atonement for the great Rabbi Chiya and his sons. The Loshen Kovet Huzeh, Kishumaskir Oviv O'Rabu Lacher Misosu Tzoroch Lomarkin. This is an expression of respect that after a person's father or Rav, his teacher, his rabbi, dies, he, the survivor, should say this. Now, there are very deep concepts over here that probably are explained much more extensively in the Kabbalistic realm, but just a word about that, even though personally I have no Kabbalistic knowledge, but nevertheless the understanding here is that the deceased they of course appear dead to us, but their souls continue in the next world, and they experience all kinds of experiences and are subject to judgment, and certainly within the first year of an individual's demise. So the understanding is that there is a certain judgment that the soul undergoes, and part of the judgment could be some type of pain, deprivation, suffering, or whatever. One has the power, as we can see in this statement, to let's say atone through experiencing. One who experiences suffering can dedicate the suffering to serve as, instead of the soul in the next world experiencing the pain, I, through my suffering, shall serve as that pain and hence atonement for the deceased. I once heard it said, again, I don't have a source for this and I can't prove it right now, but I've heard it said that even a minor suffering, minor pain, can go a long way to serve as an atonement for someone in the next world. There's a certain magnification, if you will, that the small pain I experience here is magnified many-fold regarding the next world, and serves as a major form of cleansing and atonement. Usually it's not my style to deal with these matters. They are way beyond my understanding of things. My scholarship does not include that by any stretch of the imagination. But nevertheless, we are dealing with the simple text of the Gemara and Rashi, so we felt maybe there is room to note that. An interesting source regarding what is considered suffering, how far does suffering go on the minimum scale of things? What setback or pain is considered suffering, Yisurin, even if it's a very small level of discomfort? Information on that topic, how small can something be and still be considered Yisurin, is found in the Gemara Erechin, Daf Tes Zayin Omid Beis. If you are interested, you can look at that Gemara toward the bottom of the Omid. Now, having said all of that, Reish Lakish says, and as Rashi says, that it's before you want to say something, and it's after the demise of one's Rav or one's parent, so one would say this. Hareini kaporas Rabbi Chiya Bonav, and now a little more background. Shebetchila kishenishtakcha Torah Yisrael, originally when Torah was in a state of forgetfulness from the people of Israel, Ola Ezra mibavel viyasta. Ezra, who was in the Babylonian exile after the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash, he came from Bavel, returned to Eretz Yisrael, and re-established the Torah. Chazer v'nishtakcha, as time went on, there was weakness in Torah, and again forgetfulness set in. Ola Hillel habavli viyasta. Hillel arose from Babylonia and reestablished it. Chazer v'nishtakcha the Rabbi Chiya Bonav viyazdua, and likewise, as time went on, it needed to be re-strengthened. Rabbi Chiya and his sons came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael and re-established it. V'chein Omar Rabbi Chiya Ubonav, and thusly says Rabbi Chiya and his sons, and this is of course Reish Lakish quoting them. And as we said before, that's why he opened up his comment with, since he's quoting them, he commented, Hareini kaporas Rabbi Chiya Bonav. So he says, I want to be their atonement. And thusly they said, Lo nechliku Rabbi Dosev HaChachamim al machzolos shel Usha. Rabbi Dosev HaChachamim had argued regarding, is Tumas Medris something shayach, does it have relevance to mats? Well, they had no argument regarding the Usha machzolos. at the top of Omid Beis, Shehein, Tameos. They're clearly subject to Tumas measures. They're designed, they're made for reclining, for Shechiva. Vishel Tveria, no argument regarding the Tveria mats, Shehein, Toros. They are a hard material. No one reclines on them. Hence, they are not subject to Tumas Medrus. They're not designed for reclining. They're not subject to Medrus. Alma Nechliku, regarding what did Rabbi Dosan and the Chachamah argue, Al Shar Mekomos Mats, from places other than Ushan Tveria, Morsovar Kivan Deleko de Yosef Alayu. Rabbi Dosa figures that since people don't generally sit on mats, so Kidit Tveria Damion, they'll have the Tveria mat status, and they are Tohar from Tumas Medrus. That was Rabbi Dosa. That's why he mentioned Tumas Mace, but not Tumas Medrus. They're not designed for reclining. Umor Sovar Kivan de Mikri Viasvi Olayu, the Chachomim who did mention Tumas Medrus, since it happens, Mikri, by chance, it happens at times that people recline on the mats of Shar Mekomos, Kide'usha Damyan. I'm going to classify them as Usha mats, and hence are subject to Tumas Medrus. Omar Mar, we mentioned this earlier, Kol HaChotzolos Mitamin Tome Meis, Divrei Rebbe Doisa. The Gemara asks, and here we're going to need to use our markings. We have a star that indicates to go back to Omid Aleph. Let's go back to Omid Aleph. Find the parallel star, which indicates Omid Beis, a little more than halfway down. We had a source dealing with mats. And we saw woven mats and twisted mats where Rebbe, and we have a chart regarding them as well, and we saw in that discussion Rebbe Yossi holding that you can use the konim and chilas, even though they're hard mats, they can be used as schach. Regarding the aruga, the woven mats, Rabbi Yossi says they can be used as schach, and Rabbi Dosa agrees with that. Now, when you say something can be used as schach, it means it's not mekabel tuma. Otherwise, it's not kosher as schach. So, Rabbi Dosa in agreement with Rabbi Yossi. What's Rabbi Dosa's opinion then? Mats can be used as schach. That means they're not mekabel tuma. What do we have? What did we just see, though, in the source? Kol HaChatzos Matam Tomei Meis, Divrei Rabbi Dosa. Rabbi Dosa says they are Mekabel Tumas Meis. All mats are Mekabel Tumas Meis. If they're Mekabel Tumah, if they're susceptible to Tumah, they're not kosher for Schach. So that's our question. So we read that. Let's read the words. V'ha Tanya. Did we not learn back on Omen Aleph, V'chein Hoya Rabbi Dosa Omer Kedvarov? Rabbi Dosa said, like Rabbi Yossi, that you can mesachech, you can use the mats as chach, indicating they're not a vessel, they're not mekabel tuma. So how can Rabbi Dosa here say that all chotzelos are metam and tumas meis? Lo kashya, there is no difficulty. We can turn to illustration 325. You see a mat, but it has a rim around it, and it's holding fruits. Ha, the Gemara says, Ha, the is le gadanfo. Gadanfo is a rim, and that's illustration 325. Under those circumstances, it's not a flat mat anymore. It has a base kibble. It's makabel tuma. It's subject to tuma because of the fact that it is a vessel with a receptacle area. If it's a flat mat, it's not used for shchiva, that is what Rabbi Dosa was saying, that it can be used as schach. It's flat. It doesn't have a base kibble, doesn't have a receptacle area, therefore it's not classified as a kli, and therefore it's not mekabel tuma. It's what we would call, possibly call it pshute kliates. When we say it's not classed as a clean, means it's not classed as a clean with regard to tumah absorption. Now, as we mentioned earlier, Mesve, the magnificence of these brackets, of this marking system, shows you that the Mesve is not a question on that which was said just now. The brackets help you to see that this is a throwback to that which we saw back on Omer Aleph, the Machlokas, Rav Dimi Baram Duri, and Reish Lakish as to the definition of Chaitzolos. And it, maybe we're guilty of overkill, but on the side we have a Nosei Mivneh heading, where we feature Roman numerals 1 and 2, and we indicate Shnei Lushonos, there are two versions, Shebohem HaGemara Makshe Al Pirusham Shrav Dimi Reish Lakish Liel Baman Aleph. Here the Gemara will have two Lushonos where questions are raised on the opinions of Rav Dimi and Reish Lakish b'mahu chotzolos, regarding their explanation of what chotzolos are. And you can see that we have two different shapes to highlight the respective terms marzuvli and machzolos. The Gemara, long question. Mesve, chotzolos, and we also note we have a starred note. Chotzolos hu habitui, this is the word shofia b'mokor b'omen aleph, sha'olav cholku Rav Avdimi Reish Lakish. In order to help you connect that, we have this arrow indicating to look at Omen Aleph, and you can, if you find the arrow which indicates Omen Beis back on Chof Omen Aleph, you'll see we're pointing to the word chotzolos, and it's concerning that word that eventually there was a machlokes Rav Avdimi and Reish Lakish, Shimon ben Lakish. So we have a source. It says, we say, Chotzolos shall, we have materials here. As we indicated before, we're not interested right now in providing translations of these materials. Rashi will give you some French words here and there, and you can look there for more explanation. But mats, or actually, chotzolos, we cannot say mats. That's important. We just use the word chotzolos. Made of shel sham, v'shel gemi, v'shel sak, v'shel safira. As we said, different material. Sack, by the way, is made of goat's hair, and safira is made from horse hair. Hair moved from the horse's mane or its tail. Gemi is also is reed material. So mats made of these different substances. Mitame tome mace. Divrei Rebbe Doisa. V'chachomim omrim af medris. This, by the way, is very similar to the source we saw in Omen Aleph, but it is has the it's more elaborate in that it provides actual materials. So we see chotzolos, and chotzolos made of these different materials. The machlokas Rebbe Dos and the Chachamim. Bishlamo lemandomer marzufli. Things work out well according to Rav Avdimi that explained chotzolos as marzuvli. And marzuvli, we saw an illustration of that before on page 63 in the Pirush Chai, illustration 324. So the marzuvli, we say according to Rav Avdimi, who explained chotzolos as marzuvli, shel sham v'shel gemi, these are two materials mentioned in the source. So marzuvli, made of sham and gemi material, chazu l'kinsa d'piri, they can be made into what you see in 327, receptacles for large fruits that won't fall through any holes in that woven basket. So that it's what you're dealing with is a vessel preparation that you would make like marzuvli can be made into a kinsa de peri, and it serves as something that we can understand that you would make from sham and gemi chotzolos, i.e. marzuvli, and have a function. Shel sak v'shel safir, the other two materials. These can be woven in a tight weaving, as opposed to the first materials. So the holes in baskets made of sack and safira, or I should say marzuvli, made into out of sack and safira, so chazu leguki vitzoni, they are fit to be made into baskets which will hold much finer, smaller food items. Elolamanda Omar machzolos mamish. But according to Reish Lakish, that chotzolos is a flat thing that has no receptacle capacity. Bishlamo shel sak v'shel safira, actual mats. That's Reish Lakish's pshat in the word chotzolos. Actual mats, flat mats made of sak and safira, chazu leparsi v'napvisa. They can be used as parsi, and nafas. Parsi is a type of curtain in front of an opening, in front of a doorway. Nafasa, it could be used as a sifter, a napa. And there's an illustration, 328. And the illustration that you see there is based on what Rashi describes in some detail. But you can see it was something that was flat. You can tie up the ends together and use it as a sifter. The holes in this, we said before, when you weave together sack and safira, they can be tightly woven. And this can be used as a sifter. Ella, shel sham v'shel gemi, flat mats made of sham and gemi, lemai chazu, what function would they have? Why would anyone make actual mats out of sham and gemi? So this is what we're asking. If you say that chotzolos are marzuvli, so we have a use for all four materials, as the Gemara explained. But if you say that chotzolos means flat mats, so then the four materials cannot all be accounted for. What are you going to make flat mats if out of sham and gemi? The Gemara answers, there is value. Chazu ninazaisa. This is for covering barrels. Rashi says, l'chasu negigis she'oisimem shecher. Nazaisa are barrels that are used for making beer. And Maseches Shabbos, in the sugi that deals with the psik resha, you see the loshen misukraya dinazaisa. So, and it's in that context that the Gemara speaks about using a cloth as a plug for a barrel of liquid, either a barrel of beer or wine. We continue in the Gemara. So, what have we done so far? We raised a question, and in Roman numeral number 1, we saw the question was directed at Reish Lakish. It opened, the Gemara opened up with saying things work out well according to Rav Avdimi, who explained Chotzos as Marzuvli. But according to Reish Lakish, that said Machzos Mamish, so we had a problem and we gave an answer. Roman numeral number 2, Ika the Amri. This is basically the same Gemara in a mirror image. Bishlamo lemando omar machzolos mamish. Things work out well according to Reish Lakish, who explained chotzolos is referring to actual flat mats. And how do things work out? Because the materials mentioned in the source, all four materials can be accounted for. Shel sham v'shel gemi, flat mats made of sham and gemi material, chazu l'nazaisa. They're fit for using as barrel covers. Shel sak v'shel safira, chazu l'parsi v'nafisa. Flat mats made of sak and safira material are suitable for curtains and sifters. Elo lamandom are marzuvli. But according to Rav Avdimi, that explained chotzolos as being marzuvli, bishlamo shel sak v'shel safira, I can account for sak and safira marzuvli, chazu l'gulki v'tzani. They are fit for being made into gulki and sunny. Those are baskets that hold small fruits. Ela shel sham v'shel gemi lamai chazu. But baskets made of sham and gemi, they basically have large holes in them. They're not woven tightly. So what are they fit for? Chazu lekinsa depiri. It's useful for to be as a receptacle for large type fruits that won't fall through the holes. Tanya, Omar Rabbi Chananya, kishiyaradati legoila. When I descended to the diaspora, to the area outside of Eretz Yisrael, Rashi says why he went there. He went there for for purpose of making calculations and declaring a leap year, but that's beyond our, we don't have to dwell on that now. He says, when I went there, Motsasi Zokein Echad, I found a sage, V'omar Li, and he told me, Mesachachin Bevudya, that you can use a budya. Budya is a machzeles, it's a mat. You can use that as schach. Ukshebosi Eitzu Rebbe Yeshua Achi Abba, when I came to my uncle, Rebbe Yeshua, my father's brother, Hoide Lidvorov, he conceded to that. He says, correct. Omer of Chista, Vehu Deles Le Gadanfa, that the budyo can be used as chach, provided it doesn't have a rim. And we mentioned that the issue of the Gadanfa earlier on this Omid. Omar Ula, Hani Budisa de Bene Mechuzah, the mats of the people of Mechuzah, Mechuzah is the name of a place, Il Mole Kir Shelohen, if not for their rim, Kir literally is a wall, but it's the Rashi says it's the Gadanfa, the rim. If not for that, Misachim Behu, they could have been used. The fact that it has a rim makes it into a kli, a service, a kli that has a base kibul and hence subject to tumor and not fit for schach. But if it didn't have the rim, we would use it as schach. Tanya Nami Hoch, we have a Tanaic source that says, likewise, Misachachin bebudya, you can use a budya, a mat, because they are stam made for sikuch, the Yeshlem kir ein Misachin bohen. However, if they have a kir, a rim, they cannot be used. So, with that, you see, we conclude the first perek of Sukkah, and now we turn to the beginning of the second perek. But before we do, thusly, we glance at the illustrations that accompany this. Illustration 329. We see a Sukkah, it's a cutaway section, and we see someone sleeping under a bed in the Sukkah. In our previous year, we did speak about sleeping in canopy beds, but here we're talking about someone sleeping underneath a bed. A canopy bed, someone sleeps on top of the mattress with a canopy over him. Here he's sleeping under the bed. The Mishnah. Hayoshen tachas hamita b'sukkah lo yotza yedei chavaso. Someone who sleeps under a bed in a sukkah, he is not in fulfillment of mitzvah sukkah. There is something other than schach that is covering him. Namely, the bed is covering him. So he's not said to be in the sukkah, directly in the sukkah. True, physically he's contained within the sukkah, but over him, the oihel that is over him, that which is overshadowing him, that which is covering him, is a different oihel, and it's not the schach. Amar Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, and he says, Noyagin hayinu sheyinu yishin tachas hamita b'fnei hazakenim. We practiced sleeping under beds in sukkahs in front of the sages, v'lo omru lanu davar, and they did not say anything. If we were doing something wrong, now sleeping must take place in a sukkah, unless you're in a cold region, you're expected to sleep in the sukkah. We slept in the sukkah under beds. They didn't say anything. Must be that what we were doing was all right. Omar Rabbi Shimon. We'll see shortly how Rabbi Shimon reflects the opinion of the Tanakhama. He says, Maise b'tevi avdu sh'Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon reports an incident involving Tevi. It's a name of the servant of Rabban Gamliel. Shehayo yoshen tachas hamita, he would sleep in the sukkah under the bed. V'omar lahen Rabban Gamliel, lazakenim, And Rav Gamliel pointed out to his colleagues, he said, "Re'isim Tevi Avdi Shu Talmud Chacham. Do you know? You see my servant Tevi? He is a Talmudic scholar. Even though he is a servant, he's a slave. Nevertheless, that doesn't preclude his the possibility of being a Talmudic scholar. We know even in the Torah, the servant of Avram Avinu, Eliezer, was known as Damesek Eliezer. Damesek is taken to mean an abbreviation or a contraction of Dola Umashke Mitorosa Sharabo. He would draw the Torah of his Rav and teach others his Torah. So Eliezer, the servant of Avram, was a Torah scholar. And later generations, you see, Tevi was a Torah scholar. And the point here is V'yodea, and he knows Shavodim Torah Minasukah. Slaves have a halachic classification very similar to that of women. And when it comes to positive time related or time bound mitzvahs like sukkah, it's a time related, a calendar related mitzvah. Those kind of mitzvahs, positive time bound mitzvahs, women and slaves are exempt from them. And therefore, he knows that avodah b'turmin asukah l'fikoch yoshein hu tachas amita. Therefore, he is allowed. Therefore, he chose to sleep under the bed. In other words, he is not obligated in sukkah. Therefore, he can be under the bed. Ulefi darkeinu lomadnu, and in the course of what was just said, we learn shai yoshein tachas amita lo yotzi dechovos. So someone who is obligated in the midst of sukkah cannot sleep under the bed. And if he does, he doesn't fulfill his sukkah requirement. So that this section, Rabbi Shimon, till the end of the Mishnah, is telling us sleeping under the bed is not allowed. Who said that earlier? The Tanna Kamma said that at the first line of the Mishnah. The Gemara asks, why is sleeping under the bed a problem? V'ha leko asora. You don't have 10 tfachim of height. And if you don't have 10 tfachim of height, meaning from the floor till the bed that's over your head, so you're not contained within an ohel. It's like, can someone sleep in a sukkah under blankets? Of course he can. You'll tell me he's covered by something other than tzach, but blankets don't constitute a separate entity, a separate environment. If the bed is within 10 tefachim of the ground, so likewise, you're not in a separate entity. So why does the Mishnah say that one who sleeps under a bed in a sukkah doesn't fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah? He's not in a separate ohel. Tirgim HaShmuel, Shmuel explains the mita asara. We're talking about a bed that in fact is, and the Mishnah is talking about a bed that is 10 tefachim above the ground. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, a nosei, which reads, Ohel She'eno Osui Bidei Odom. And we also note that this discussion lasts till Chof Aleph Omid Bey. So it's a rather long discussion. The issue is an Ohel, a structure, a covering, we'll call this separate entity idea, but not made by man, a naturally formed ohel. What is its halachic status? And when we speak about ohel, in addition to sukkah that we have just discussed, there is another major topic that's affected by ohel, and it has to do with the conveyance of tumas meis. Namely, if you have, let's say, a piece of corpse material, an olive quantity of mace of the dead person, of course, under the same ceiling as you might be located, or food or vessels or whatever, something that's subject to being mekabel tumah by the virtue of the fact that you're under the same covering. So if you're under the same oihel, so the tumah will be communicated from the mace to the other item. So that's the background to this source. Tumas oil, in the context of what we call Dvarim HaMeviim Es HaTuma. Can Tuma be communicated from the mace to the other item by virtue of the fact that they're under one of these? So we have a source. There are a lot of illustrations that accompany this source. So you should have your Pirush Chai book open to page 65, starting with illustration 330. There you see a Chor Shechoru Mayim. That's because of water erosion, so an overhang was formed. And 331, Chor Shechorua, a hole made by Shrotzen, by varmints, creatures that have a burrowing tendency. 332, you can see crevices made by salt erosion. On the next page, on 366, you see stones set up in a tripod fashion. There's two stones next to each other and a third stone above them, between them. So the space formed by the stones underneath that middle stone is going to be our focus of attention. And in 334, you see a stack of beams koroser beams. That's a cross section you're looking at there. Or even, it doesn't have to be that, it's whatever you're seeing, beams that are set up with a gap under the middle beam. So the source, and we can, now that we've explained it, you can see each one of these points in the source. Echot chor shechoru amayim, the water eroded hole. O shrotzim, or made by the varmints. O shachlosu malechas, or salt eroded. V'chein madboch avonim, a pile of stones, as we saw in 333. V'chein sabor shel koros, or a stack of beams. Mahil al hatuma. So if underneath the gaps that we just described there was both some corpse material and something else, the other item will become tome. The tuma will be conveyed from the corpse material, and we've used this imagery before. If you just imagine the nature of smoke when it's something is burning and smoking within a covered environment, the smoke will rise till the ceiling. It can't go up anymore, then it starts to spread out to all areas underneath the same overhang. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Oihel She'eno Osui Bidei Odom Einoi Oihel. Any overshadowing or covering that is not made by man is not considered an Oihel with regard to the laws of Tumah conveyance. So we're dealing with defining Ohel. My time at Rabbi Yehuda, what's the basis of Rabbi Yehuda? So the Gemara answers on the top of Chof Aleph Amud Aleph, Yolif Ohel Ohel Mimishkan. He has a word comparison, a Gzera Shava, from the Mishkan. The Mishkan, of course, the portable predecessor of the Beis HaMikdash that was made by Moshe Rabbeinu in the Midbar, during the 40 years of travel in the Midbar after leaving Mitzrayim. So the word Ohel appears in the context of the Mishkan. Ksiv Hocha Zois Hater Odom Kios Boel says here in the context of Tuma, the word Ohel. The Pasuk says these are the rules of a person when he dies. Tumas Meis in an Ohel. Uksiv Hosam, and it says in the construction of the Mishkan, Vayifro says Ohel Ala Mishkan. See the word Ohel in the context of the Mishkan. Ma lahalon bidei Adam, just like the Mishkan was constructed by man, not naturally formed, was constructed by man. Af kan, so too, in the context of Tumas Ohel, an Ohel is not an Ohel unless it's bidei Adam. And the Pasuk demands, in order for Tumah to be conveyed, it has to be in the context of an Ohel. V'rabonon, the Rabbanon, who were not limiting to an Ohel Bidei Adam, they say Ohel, Ohel, Riba. Rashi at the top says Ohel, Riba. Ohelim, Tuva, Ksivi, Bavashas, Para, Larabos, Afe, Osli, Melov. The word Ohel appears several times in the Parsha of the Torah, Rashi refers to Parsha's Porah, that's the red heifer that is eventually burned, and its ashes are used for the purification of someone who was defiled to the dead. So in that Parsha that deals with Tumas Meis, the word oil appears numerous times. That's inclusionary. It will include even Osui Me'elov, even if it's naturally formed. We are, as we mentioned earlier at the introduction of this sukkah, we said that this lasts till Chof Aleph Amud Beis, so we have to just make note of the fact that we're in the middle of a discussion. The Gemara will continue with a long question. If you just read the long question, you can see the continuation is V'savar Rabbi Yehuda Kol Shein Osui Bidei Odameinu Oil. Is that really so? That if it's not naturally, that if it's naturally formed, not it's not made by man, it's not considered an oil. We're going to see to the contrary in this long Tanaic source where Rabbi Yehuda's name appears toward the end, and the question will be raised and will be awaiting an answer. However, we are in the context of the Daf Yomi program, and hence we've finished our Daf Chof quota, and this is a convenient pausing point. But before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.